Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Small Biz Talk Radio. I'm Lori Leiker, your host. We're broadcasting live from Orange Co-working this afternoon in South Austin. My company is called Small Biz Coaching. I coach businesses on business process improvement and employee turnover reduction. Our guest today is Brian Marshall with the Business Community Lenders of Texas. He's the Director of Entrepreneurship. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
Tell us a little bit about what Business Community Lenders of Texas does, your role in it, and your role in the business community in Austin in general.
Sure. So Business Community Lenders is an economic development corporation, and we have two separate functions that are distinctive. Of course, we are a lender, so we do small business lending. Our lending starts at $20,000 all the way up to $1 million. So we can support a startup all the way through to a $1 million type lending. So it's a more full cycle. We also do home education. So if you're a first-time buyer and you want to know how much of a house you can afford, we also do that. And, of course, the area that I specialize in, which is business development, where I work with existing or startup businesses in many capacities on just getting them either strategically set in the new growth direction if they're an existing business, or helping them create a business plan and a good marketing strategy if they're a startup.
And you have other roles within the business community of Austin, correct?
Correct. So I also chair the Entrepreneur and Small Business Development Committee for the Greater Austin Black Chamber as well. And then I also do consulting focusing on procurement, supplier diversity for the city, and then also for many private entities such as Dell and many of the other big major players in supplier diversity and procurement.
Now, when we're talking about diversity, we're talking about what the government, what Small Business Administration would term to be disadvantaged businesses, correct?
Well, that's one distinction. The broader distinction is when you say diverse businesses, those are more classified as women, Hispanic, African-American, Asian, and veteran-owned businesses. The disadvantage classification, or what we call DBE, or disadvantaged business entity or enterprise, is a separate classification that's usually used by when we talk about public procurement or state procurement. It's stating this is a disadvantaged community, area, or demographic type. And that's how they classify it.
Okay. So when we're looking at business, not just in Austin, but nationwide, where do you see entrepreneurship going? It seems to me like every other day there's another company starting. Where do we stand with that?
Well, when we look at this, Lori, that's a good question. So there's data out when we look at it across the country. You have to put it in two categories. So you can go entrepreneurship urban area, and you can go entrepreneurship in rural area. So let's start with the most concerning. Entrepreneurship in the rural areas, these are your small towns that are way off from your major city. So if we take Texas, the I-35 corridor, Dallas, San Antonio, Houston, of course, Austin, are all the major core. So
okay.
urban or rural areas that surround those are still surviving, are still stable. However, the further you go away from these urban areas and it becomes more rural, and industries pull away from these rural areas, these would be major industries that usually would employ maybe 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 people, when those industries pull away, in many areas they are, it then decreases the number of entrepreneurial businesses in these rural areas. So for basically mm-hmm. in the rural area, you're seeing in some states a decline of entrepreneurship. And then in other areas where you see an expansion of the urban population that supports them, we'll pick on Austin. Let's say that's the Williamson County, that's a San Marcos in the Kyle area. You'll see a continuing increase in entrepreneurship all the way down through San Antonio, mm-hmm. anything along the I-35 corridor.
What do you think the reason is some of these major corporations are moving out of the more rural areas toward the urban population centers?
Well, we see it on the news each day. It's, of course, the economy. As mm-hmm. many businesses scale down or shift their product or services to a new business model, that's usually what you see happens. And then, of course, let's not forget the key kind of thing in all these rural areas. It's the big box stores. So the best example would be you live in a rural community where there's Mr. Johnson's tool store.
Mm-hmm.
However, Walmart or any other big box competitor comes in and then basically sucks all the business away from Mr. Johnson's tool store because they can easily go to Walmart. They've got more variety, pricing may be better, and it really has a detrimental impact on that rural small business.
And we saw that happening in South Dakota when we were there, where you've got tons of little tiny towns that in the past serviced the railroad, serviced logging industry or mining, and stores, just as you said, Walmart, Kmart, things like that come in and drive all the smaller businesses out of town. And then if those corporations decide to close down the big box stores, then all of a sudden you've got these areas that are underserved, and you end up with things like food deserts and whatnot.
Exactly. And since you're speaking of the Dakotas, let's look at the economy. Oil. So let's take that mm-hmm. industry, for example. And you're in the Dakotas. I spent 3.5 years in Minot, North Dakota, and it was a big booming with oil. But that's another
factor. My condolences.
Yes. But when you take that area and that particular industry, as the oil production declines, then mm-hmm. what you see is the same thing. When it's in the reverse and oil production's up, or just starting out, it becomes a boom town. Guess what pops up? Hotels, restaurants, all the other support services and entrepreneur services that then support that new booming industry, then they all thrive. However, if that's the only industry and oil production starts to slow, meaning less work for the workers there, they move away, then these businesses that are there, there's no clients, there's no market, and those businesses then begin to shut down, and unless they diversify into something else, then those businesses go away.
How do you see a diversified entrepreneur pool helping some of these more rural areas to continue growing?
Yes. So the most diversified tool that we have is, of course, your state and federal government. That would be in the form of, for example, the USDA, which also has a lot of funding for rural areas and entrepreneur areas today. As a matter of fact, locally, mission-based organizations, of course, like a BCL of Texas, People Fund, Big Austin, supports those rural areas. So, for example, the USDA sees the need in these rural areas, and People Fund gets $1 million to go and execute and support in that area. BCL gets $800,000, and of course, you get a big Austin that also gets that type of funding as well. And then we go and look for ways to deploy that in the form of lending power to support these businesses.
Do you see the internet as helping these rural areas with diversified business? Because now you don't have to be in to do a lot of this work.
Yeah. The internet could. So that's a good question as well. So when we look at the types of businesses, and really, Lori, leads into a question of what are good types of businesses that should be started today, whether you're in a rural area or in an urban area. But specifically for the urban area, the internet can help, especially if it's a business that's targeting the global market. So what do I mean by that? Mm-hmm. You're selling tchotchkes in a rural area of, why not, North Dakota, but you're not selling it. Your market is not the U.S. It's to someone in Africa, someone in Asia, and you have a go-between in between those countries that helps deploy your product. Many businesses are thriving, and surprisingly enough, these are export businesses that really, in some instances, it's a one-person business making $1 million a year exporting a product overseas.
Mm-hmm. And I know that having met last week with the City of Austin's Global Economic Development, that's something that the city is working on quite extensively. So I know that other cities around the country and the federal government are also working on increasing trade from the United States to other countries and vice versa. What kind of funding, we were talking before about diversified businesses, what kind of funding is available for the underserved populations, let's say African-American businesses, if somebody wanted to start a company, is there different funding available that's going unused?
The main funding that would be there, of course, back to your state and federal government. So at the federal level, it's the Small Business Administration, and then which is really more of your, we call it a micro lending, where there's lending dollars available for a micro business, meaning the amount is under $50,000. That money can be used for business of working capital. If you are then a business that is starting to export or utilize that particular capacity, that type of funding is available. And then, of course, locally, that's going to all depend. You have mission-based lenders who utilize either their own business capital or private business capital. BCL does that. And then those dollars could be used the same way. From a grant level, of course, there's a lot of grant dollars out there that, in many instances, that can come from private banks. Wells Fargo, for example, is a really good example. They have a $75 million grant that focuses on the minority community or diverse community, specifically African-American, but they do recognize from a diversity standpoint that can be Hispanic, women, Asian, and veteran. But this money is specifically designed for lenders or facilitators of lending, such as a BCL, to go target this market where, hey, my credit's not that great, but I've got a great business plan and a great business model, but I need flexibility in lending. So those types of dollars are available.
Let's go back to a little bit to entrepreneurship in general. It seems to me, as I'm looking at new businesses that are coming up, that it's pretty, for lack of a better term, vanilla. What percentage of new businesses are coming out of the African American community?
Yeah, so growth, let's say in the state of Texas, here's what it looks like. So we have 2.5 million businesses in the state of Texas. African American represents about 10% of that. Yet, the growth or the number of new business growth, African Americans represent 78% growth year over year. So lots of growth there. Hispanic growth is running at 68% when you look at new business creation. So that's really how we're looking in the state of Texas. Of course, women, if you just take the mix of whether it's African-American, Hispanic, Caucasian, across the board there, you're looking at over 60, 75% growth as well. So that's kind of really what it starts to look like for the state of Texas. Nationally, the same figures, especially in the Hispanic community and that demographic, we see exponential growth there. If you go from 2007 to 2012, you saw over, I'd say about 700,000 new business starts in the Hispanic community. With African American, there are about 2.5 million African American businesses. That's up from 1.9, so we even grew there about 700,000 new businesses.
What industry sectors are they in mostly?
Good question. So for that question, here's how it breaks down if you're looking from a diversity standpoint. So if we talk about in the state of Texas, when we look at African Americans, based off data that comes from our census, Bureau of Labor Statistics as well. So the most recent data we do have is as of 2012, but it's still pretty much correct. For African-American, it's going to be in the other. Tip businesses there tend to be all types. They range from, basic services such as janitorial services. Healthcare is the largest, one of the breakout areas, especially for African American women. And these are your businesses in healthcare that relate to a home health service. Easy businesses to start, very, very, very easy to get funded because in many instances, the individuals they're helping get money from Medicaid, Medicare, state programs. That's one of the high, high growth areas. And then when we look at Hispanics, surprisingly enough, construction still remains number one, followed by professional services. And then also you also see an other category where it's all different types, whether that be a retail food establishment, it breaks down that way.
Okay. What about for women?
What's the question?
What about for women? What kind of industries are they? Are those all across the board, or is there one specific industry that you find more women-owned businesses?
The specific industry in the state of Texas and nationally is health services.
Okay. So what we're looking at are not necessarily high-tech businesses. What do you see coming down the pike that would encourage these business groups, these sectors of the population? What do you see coming down that will encourage more high-tech new business as opposed to traditional businesses?
Yeah, another good question. Of course, the focus on STEM is, just less than a decade old. So I think what you're going to see there is where that will come out. And then when we say tech, let me kind of narrow that down so it's not so broad. So tech can be also biotech that feeds into our health system. You've got the University of Texas Health Network. You've got the hospital in Austin, of course. There's now connections with Dallas, San Antonio, Houston. That's going to be big. The other area of tech, if you want to separate it out even more, and because it impacts us as a nation and globally, is environmental tech. So now we get more into solar and other forms of tech that support us as a planet. And then there's financial tech, or call fintech. that supports the financial industries. Those are some areas that will break out. And then there are a few others that are in tech that feed IT services. Of course, then there's software and application and coding tech. So it's much broader and not so narrowly defined as it's a guy writing code. It's much more. It's biotech that relates to health. There's agricultural tech that relates to our food. Of course, we talked about the wind, solar. All those are different forms of tech. So I think as we see more of the fruits of STEM and its focus, you'll see more and more tech businesses from our that come out of our colleges. You'll see more of that coming out of the high schools that lead in to the colleges. That's where you'll see it.
Do you see that being let me back up. When we're talking about small businesses specifically and startups, what's the general ratio of startups, their longevity? What percentage make it past the first 5 years?
Well, that's a good question as well. Pretty much it stays the same. It's surprisingly been consistent that it's still 50%. Sometimes I go a little bit harder and go at 60% that really actually fail, that don't make it over that finish line of 5 years. And then you ask, well, why is that? Well, there are many reasons why. In most instances, it's either financial, and that gets into specifically many entrepreneurs, when they start up with the idea. It doesn't necessarily mean that they understand finances such as income statements, balance sheets. Those things are not necessarily the key talent that they have. It's either usually a passion for delivering a product or service or an idea. So that's usually the number one shutdown of the bill of business or killer of the business is lack of understanding of the economic model for the business. The other that pops up in many, many instances is, hey, my market, well, I ended up in the wrong market, or I could not penetrate my marketing anymore, or it started to dwindle. And that's another reason why many of these businesses simply don't make it. And then the other one, which is where you and I both play, is many entrepreneurs, surprisingly enough, say, well, I can't find someone with the expertise to help me in growing my business, which you and I both find that interesting, since there's you've got incubators, you've got SCORE, which they do free mentoring. You've got the Sale of Texas. You've got all these programs, Austin Community College. You have all these programs out there where you can find this expertise. But supposedly, that is a common statement, especially when you poll many of the startups, whether across the state, all the data keeps coming back the same. Hey, my market ran out. My finances, I couldn't get funding, or we just ran through the money, or lack of expertise on just in this particular industry that I'm trying to grow my business in. Let's go back to exports, your exports business, and there, I couldn't find the expertise to help me grow the business. So those seem to be the top three that reasons why businesses don't make it to the five-year point. And then some, hey, the other outliers are, hey, I started with this passion. The business is not growing as fast as I'd like it to. And then I end up going back into whatever industry. If I came from the corporate industry and my business only is making maybe $5,000-$10,000 a year, and I'm in my third year, and I get an offer to go back into an industry that's going to pay me double, triple that, many of them just simply go back to a regular paying job.
It is quite quite a balancing act when you're working for yourself. You really have to know what you're doing and have a little higher tolerance for risk than in most businesses. With this 50 to 60% failure rate in 5 years, what are we looking at in terms of numbers of jobs lost or jobs gained when someone opens a new business?
That's a good question. Actually, I was looking at some data. We'll just state in Texas, it equals out surprisingly. So if you go with the state of Texas in 2014 to 2015, there were 14,000 new startups that were done by the end of that first year. They basically just shut down. And then with that, there was just as many job creation in other industries, and these are usually your major players, your big employers. We'll take in Central Texas, like a Dell, a University of Texas, hospitals that employ tens of thousands of people. The job market in Texas is what, less than 4.5%, 4%. So it's a rotation. So that's what you're seeing is there's new starts, and then many, it's a new, I may shut my business down, but then guess what I'm doing? I'm going back into another industry. So it's a cyclical cycle.
It's interesting to watch how all these little dominoes play together when we're talking about business in general, and then you look at the number of startups, the number of small companies that exist compared to the very large companies that exist, and some of the real innovation that smaller companies are putting out into the marketplace. In the last couple minutes that we have, where do you see entrepreneurship going in the next, say, 5 years?
I see entrepreneur growing, still growing. In the next 5 to 10 years, specifically, I see it growing more in an area, in a age group that we probably haven't even discussed. You'll see more of 45, 55, 65-year-olds starting businesses, where you would think it would traditionally be the young whippersnapper that's coming straight out of college. No, the shift is you'll see more and more business growth among people who are in the second or third act, and then you'll see more and more of this in, of course, your urban areas. Is where you're going to see this growth at. And, of course, you're going to see it more and more in your demographic of Hispanic and women.
Excellent. Well, Brian, thank you so much for being with us. If somebody wants to get in touch with you over at BCL, what would they do?
Well, they can either shoot me an email at B as in boy, Marshall, M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L, at bclofTexas.org, or they could give me a phone call at 512-912-9884.
Thank you so much, Brian. I appreciate you being with us today.
I enjoyed it.
And you've been listening to our conversation with Brian Marshall from the Business Community Lenders and from the Greater Austin Black Chamber of Commerce. We've been talking about entrepreneurship. If you have an entrepreneurship question, you're thinking about going into business for yourself, or you're already in business for yourself and have questions, remember one of the things that Brian mentioned is the fact that a lot of companies go under because they said they can't find the expertise that they needed. There are tons of available resources out there, including business coaches. And one of the things that we do is help coach you through growth, through issues that you're having with your business, and through changes that need to be made. So please feel free to contact the Austin Coaching Coalition if you have questions that maybe a coach could help you with. My name is Lori Leiker. I'm with the Small Biz Coaching. My website is smallbizcoaching.net. Feel free to email me at smallbizcoachtx@gmail.com. And in the meantime, have a great week. Next week, we'll be talking with Megan Anderson, who is with a brand new company called Verbal Time. They'll be talking about high-tech startups specifically with her. Thank you again for joining us, and we'll see you next week.